A week later, his disciples were again in the house, and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were shut, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it in my side. Do not doubt, but believe." Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said to him, "Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have come to believe." Now Jesus did many other things in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that through believing you may have life in his name. On a day like this, everybody is a comedian. Like the guy who said to me at the door last week, "My New Year's resolution is to exercise religiously. So I'm going to the gym on Easter and Christmas, and then I'll be done." Or the choir director who announced that there were available openings in the choir. She said, "If God has given you a beautiful voice, this is your opportunity to praise him. If not, it's your chance to get even." Or I like the minister who stood up one Sunday to announce, "My good people, I brought three different sermons with me today. The $100 sermon lasts 5 minutes. The $50 sermon lasts 15 minutes. The $20 sermon lasts a full hour. So if the ushers would come forward to take the offering, we will discover which one I will deliver." Now, I would never introduce it that way, but as they say, everybody is a comedian. Even Jesus seems to get into the spirit of the proceedings. He comes back not once, but twice. And the second time, he stuns Thomas and the others by revealing that he has been listening to their doubts even when he has been invisibly out of sight. "Hey, Thomas," he says, "how about these nail prints?" It would be funny, except for the very obvious detail that the risen Christ still has scars. "That's not how he looked in my children's Bible. According to the artist who painted him, when the Lord returned after Easter, he was glistening, shiny, even translucent, and otherworldly. When I flipped through the pages, I could tell that resurrection was a little bit weird." Okay, it was very weird. Yet Jesus seemed patched up pretty well. The bloodstains were gone. He was wearing a bright white robe. He didn't look one bit like a gardener. And I'm pretty sure his hands, feet, and side were all healed. But according to the Bible, the risen Christ has scars. Maybe that shouldn't surprise us. Anyone who is alive has scars. Do you have a good scar? I mean, the kind of scar that you could show in public? I have a little scar right here, hidden by my eyebrow. My folks had a coffee table with sharp edges. In fact, Mom still has it. I had a Fisher-Price duck on wheels that I pulled around the room. Suddenly, the duck and the cord that I pulled always got stuck under that coffee table. So one day, I crawled beneath the table to untangle the cord. I was successful, so I threw my head back in rejoicing and ended up getting 3 stitches above my eye. There's also a scar on my left leg, a big scar that had a lot more stitches. That was the day I learned a very good lesson. Don't ever climb on a swing set after you've been stomping around in the mud. Every scar tells a story. And then there's the scar on my tongue. That one came about 2 weeks after my high school graduation. Now, I should have been wearing a seatbelt. And the friend next to me should not have been lighting firecrackers from the cigarette lighter in the car. Because somehow my parents' perfectly good Dodge wrapped itself around a large oak tree. Everybody has some scars, including some hidden scars that others might not see. Each scar comes with a story, and probably a lesson or two. Because anybody who lives has some scars. But here's the thing I wonder. If you have scars, can you live? We call him Doubting Thomas, but it would be more accurate to call him Realistic Thomas. Whenever he speaks up in the Gospel of John, Thomas asks the earthy question or raises the obvious truth. Jesus says, "Let's go to my friend Lazarus, who has died." Well, Thomas knows what that means. He knows what is at stake. He says, "We will go and die with him." Or at the Last Supper, Jesus is bouncing metaphors off the walls as if they are rubber balls. He declares, "You know the way where I am going." And it's Thomas who says, "What are you talking about? How do we know the way?" So when Thomas returns on Easter evening and hears that the others have just seen the risen Lord, he says to them, "I'm not going to believe a word of it until I can touch his scars with my finger." He probably didn't believe that would ever happen, because the kind of stars that Jesus had don't lend themselves to a healthy life. And then Jesus comes back again with the scars. Do you think that's possible? The comedian Patton Oswalt lost his wife just a year ago. Her name was Michelle. She was a writer. She was working on a book, writing lots of words late into the night, and she was exhausted. So one night, Patton said, "Honey, go to bed, get some rest, sleep in tomorrow." Unknown to both of them, she had a serious heart condition, and when the next morning came, she never woke up. It was just one of those random, unexpected things. It's been a hard year of grief for him. She's a single parent now. He had to rethink his work life. They've had a lot of support from friends, and as a comedian, he says a lot of his act is now drawing upon the emotional wounds of losing your wife. "I've learned to be really honest," he says, "and the honesty leads me into some really funny things." His hard-earned wisdom is that you can't rush through the journey of grief. He recalls a line from the movie Magnolia. "I'm through with the past," says a character, "but the past isn't through with me." "That is exactly what it is," says Oswalt. "You can say you're through with grief all you want, but grief will let you know when it's done." So in the meantime, he has decided to be completely alive. "What I'm living on now," he says, "is comedy of the most absurd kind. I need it. I'm watching old Steve Martin TV specials. He was like our American Monty Python, where it's just the dumbest stuff you can think of. And I need that." We all need it. To tap into the reality of joy and the fullness of life in spite of our scars. Maybe that's why some of the funniest people we can ever know are those who have lived through a whole lot of pain, yet they are so alive that they can tell about it. You see, what the church announces is two different truths that must be held together. That the Easter Christ is full of life, and he is scarred. Easter does not remove his wounds. They are real. But Easter is the life of God, which does not allow the wounds to define him or our wounds to define us. Ask anyone who has spent time with one of our wounded warriors. See the amputee who doesn't know or didn't know he was walking into landmines. And sometime later, there he is, big smile, cracking a lot of jokes. He's proud to serve his country, and we're proud of him too. And there's more Easter life at work in him than all his wounds with all their stories. Philip Yancey wrote a book some years ago called The Jesus I Never Knew. In the book, he admits he always wondered, why did Jesus keep the scars from his crucifixion? You know, he could have had any resurrection body he wanted, and yet he chose one identifiable mainly by the scars that could be seen and touched. Why? And he concludes, the story of Easter would be incomplete without those scars on the hands, the feet, and the side of Jesus. When human beings fantasize, he says, we dream of pearly straight teeth and wrinkle-free skin and sexy ideal shapes. We dream of an unnatural state of the perfect body. But for Jesus, the pre-existent heavenly Jesus, being confined in a skeleton and human skin was the unnatural state. The scars are to him an emblem of life on our planet, a permanent reminder of those days of confinement and suffering. And then he says this, I take hope in Jesus' scars. From the perspective of heaven, they represent the most horrible event that has ever happened in the history of the universe. And even that event, though, the crucifixion, Easter turned into a memory. Because of Easter, I can hope that the tears we shed, the blows we receive, the emotional pain, the heartache over lost friends and loved ones, all these will become memories like Jesus' scars. Scars never completely go away, but neither do they hurt any longer. We will have a new start, an Easter start. All of us have our scars because we have lived a human life. It's the Easter reality that transcends all the scars. This is what the Gospel of John wants us to see, wants us to trust. For if we trust that Christ is alive, we can share in his Easter life. If we trust that he loves us, that he loves the whole world, then in trusting, we'll receive joy and peace, forgiveness and purpose, just as he said. The whole Gospel of John has been waiting for Thomas to look at Jesus and say, my Lord, my God. Ever since chapter 1, when Nathanael asked, can anything good come out of Nazareth? He was another comedian. Ever since then, we've seen something good has come. God has come on two legs, breathing, speaking, healing, the Word made flesh, and even after he is crucified, he comes back full of grace and truth, light and life. So we marvel at these mysteries. Light out of darkness, joy in spite of scars, life where death once ruled, and the God who continues to make a new creation through Christ. A new creation. You know, that reminds me of a little story that was left out of the book of Genesis. Fortunately for you, it provides the perfect ending. It seems God was talking to one of the angels and said, I have just figured out how to spin the earth so it creates this really incredible 24-hour period of alternating light and darkness. The angel said, well, what are you going to do now? God said, call it a day.